Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Welcome to our panel for this 16th day of April. It is 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. Nice to have you aboard. Let me introduce the panel. We'll get right to it. Former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
The Empire Report's J.P. Miller joins us. Good morning, J.P.
Good morning.
Political consultant to the stars, Libby Post, joins us.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
WAMC's Alan Chartek is here with exciting news. Good morning, Alan.
We do have exciting news. As you know, a day doesn't go by that I don't think of Pete Seeger and think of what Pete would have done in a particular situation or what he would have thought. I didn't always agree with him, but most of the time I did. And I didn't admire anybody more than Pete Seeger. Well, anyway, his 100th birthday is coming up on May 3rd at the Linda. And there will be celebrations all over the place for Pete. But the one that will really count is right here at the Linda Norris Auditorium. They're going to be, the tickets are going to be rolling out any second. It'll be filled up. I'm telling you that now. And who is going to be doing the one performance, and that is one person. And that is Happy Traum. Now, Happy Traum, who had been the editor of Sing Out, was a very close friend of Pete's. And they spent enormous amounts of time together. And if it's anybody who can make an audience sing the way that Pete did, it's Happy. Happy has a long association with WAMC. I prevailed on him, and he said, yeah, he would do it. Happy was a folk singing counselor at both Bucks Rock, where I went to camp, and at Lincoln Farm. He and his brother Artie, the wonderful Artie Traum, who has passed now. But Happy Traum is the guy. And if you really want to feel what it was like to go to a performance by Pete, and Happy, of course, says, well, there was only one Pete, and there was only one Pete. But when you want somebody to honor Pete and the legacy and what he was all about, then it is Happy Traum. And so on May 3rd. So you can get your tickets. And by the way, there are 200 seats, and when they're gone, they're gone. And they'll be any minute now. So you get your tickets online at WAMC.org. WAMC.org, that's all you got to do. Or go to 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262. Now, it's a $100 pledge per ticket, and it's going to fill the lockbox. And it's a limited number of tickets that are available, as I just said. It's on Friday, May 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Linda. I'll be there. I'll certainly introduce it. At the Pete's actual birthday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. So again, Pete Seeger, who was a great part of the WAMC family, and as you all remember, shortly before he died, he said, I want to do something for WAMC. And he did. He brought us down to Peekskill, the home of the infamous Peekskill riots, which he didn't want to mention. And he was a big part of all of it. So on May 3rd at the Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Center, Happy Traum. There's nobody better. I love Happy. I love what he does. And he is of the school which understood what Pete was all about and how Pete could get up there and he could wave his hand one way or the other and everybody in the audience without saying another word would sing. That's Happy Traum. So get your tickets online at WAMC.org or call that famous number, 1-800-323-9262. It's a $100 pledge per ticket to fill the lockbox. Limited numbers of tickets available. That's true. And Friday, May 3rd at 7 p.m. So get on the phone now. Don't let me down. Let's all have a great evening together. And remember the fabulous Pete Seeger with Happy Traum. 1-800-323-9262.
All right, and we'll give that number throughout the morning this morning. And when they're gone, they're gone, as Alan mentioned. $100, 1-800-323-9262.
And Joe, they'll be gone in a second or two.
All right, so let's go to, while people are doing that, we'll start off our conversation. And we'll get to the news, of course. The big news is the tragedy out of Paris. The Notre Dame Cathedral, the symbol of beauty and history of Paris, was scarred by an extensive fire on Monday evening. that caused its delicate spire to collapse, bruised by the Parisian skies with smoke, and further disheartened a city already back on its heels after weeks of violent protests. The spectacle of flames leaping from the cathedral's wooden roof, its spire glowing red then turning into a virtual cinder, stunned thousands of onlookers who gathered along the banks of the Seine and packed into the plaza of the nearby Hotel de Ville, gasping and covering their mouths in horror and wiping tears away. The good news, if there is such a thing, in a case like this, is that the building was not completely destroyed. While two-thirds of the roof was destroyed, the president of France, Emmanuel Macron, said the worst has been avoided, even though the battle is not completely won, and he vowed that the cathedral would be rebuilt. The cause of the fire, not immediately known, but it appeared to have begun in the interior network of wooden beams, many dating back to the Middle Ages and nicknamed the Forest. There was extensive restoration going on at the time, and there was thought that perhaps that was a cause. No one was killed, but a firefighter was seriously injured. Fire broke out at 6:30 Paris time. Who would like to begin? Mike?
Well, you know, the important thing to remember is that this happened at a time when there was great strife in Paris specifically, but across France, a lot of disunity. Macron, the once very popular president, was under a lot of pressure and as it's being referenced, he was planning to try to address and bring the nation back together in a scheduled broadcast speech last night, which of course didn't happen, and instead gave an impromptu speech, essentially promising to unite and to rebuild this great symbol of French history and international symbolism, of course. And at least for now, it looks like people aren't bickering about what they were bickering about. They're kind of united behind something because they are focusing on what they have in common, not their differences, which I think is, and it's not just Catholics, it's a Catholic cathedral, it's not just Christians, it's Holy Week, and this is a great symbolism, a symbol of Christianity, but it's a cultural and an important historical location and icon for all of France, and that seems to be pulling them together, and that's kind of inspiring. I mean, the morning after, tragically sad, but there's unity also, and that's good.
Yeah, I was struck by, as a lifelong practicing Catholic myself, I was struck by, of course, the images that we all saw yesterday on the television. But when you read the New York Times, it did say that the structure was saved and preserved. And Joe, as you said, two-thirds of the roof is destroyed. So not the entire roof was destroyed. But it certainly calls attention to everybody to this marvelous symbol for both France and Christianity and the world. And I saw Cardinal Dolan on the Today Show this morning give a really great interview talking about how during Holy Week this could hopefully, through this tragedy, serve as a vehicle by which to bring people together. Another thing in the Times that I read was that some art was saved, I think, previous to the fire.
Correct.
Because they were undergoing those renovations.
Right.
When they say 850-year-old cathedral, you think, wow, that's a long time ago. So it was started in 1163 and completed in 1345. So it took almost 200 years to build this. You know, we saw Hudson Yards built on the West Side Highway over the last decade. Well, but we think, wow, you know, that was like an 8 or 9 or 10 year project. We think, wow, that was a long time to build that structure on the West Side Highway. Back then, it took almost 200 years to build this beautiful structure in the heart of Paris.
And a structure that survived two world wars, and yet a restoration and a fire as a result of that. Brought it down. And as you say, not completely. I mean, it also is weird because there's so much wood inside. From the exterior, you think, oh well, this is, you know, this is battle ready because of the stone, but there's so much wood inside that obviously is, you know, again, 600-700 years old. It burns.
Yeah, as I was watching yesterday some of the television coverage, they were interviewing U.S. firefighters and experts on putting out fires. And I found that to be fascinating because they sort of have to make a quick judgment and acknowledge you can't save that, but we have to get in front of it to save the rest. And that must have been heart-wrenching for the firefighters to make those on-the-spot decisions that undoubtedly they'll be second-questioned about. But it looks like they prevailed. And the spire that went up the center, the tallest point on the cathedral, that was over 300 feet high off the ground. When I was fascinated to hear that was only built in the 1800s.
Right.
Yeah. And this cathedral has been modified. And when it was restored in the 1800s, they insisted on using the oak that they would have used back 800 or 700 years before that, and do it authentically. It'll be interesting to see how they come up with the plan to restore it this time, and it will just be another chapter in this great edifice's history, and it'll be enduring, I'm sure.
Well, it is interesting, isn't it, that a lot of people are stepping forward already. First of all, by the way, I am sure that we don't know yet what the stability of the building is, and that we're going to find out about that as it goes. I always tend to worry about the worst thing that could happen rather than the best outcome. So the other thing is, you have the richest man in France coming mm-hmm. forward with a pledge of 200 million euros. That's a lot of money. You have the government saying that we'll pitch in a lot of money into this. So I think it's going to be, and people worldwide, everybody as like the Chartocks who have been around and have, you know, been at Notre Dame are going to say, we want to do a little something. So sooner or later, everybody around the world is going to be putting something into this.
Well, Lynn said to me last night, we're going to send some money. I mean, sure. This is something. I mean, if she's a historic preservationist, then she sees this building as an icon of history and wants it to be preserved. And I see it as a symbol of religion that needs to be upheld. I mean, when I was walking through the office yesterday and I looked up, we have screens all over the place, and I saw this and I was like, oh my God, you know, this is really a tragedy for everyone, not just Catholics or Christians, but I think for everyone. You know, it's a symbol and it's a great cultural touchstone. And, you know, last night we were up late and watching Lawrence O'Donnell, and he talked about, I can't remember the guy's name, who had the show Civilization on BBC, and then it went to
PBS.
Mm-hmm. And he talked about the three things that are the touchstones of civilization, and that one of them is our buildings and our architecture, and how important it is as a way to show who we are as a people.
President Trump tweeted yesterday, so horrible to watch the massive fire at Notre Dame in Paris. Perhaps flying water tankers could be used to put it out. Must act quickly. France not excited by those remarks. They had been the security department of France or whatever that is called.
The fire people.
Yeah, well, the fire service of France. So they had been putting out updates all day, and they had obviously been sending those out in French. And then they sent one out in English, and that says hundreds of firemen on the shortly after the president's tweet, hundreds of firemen on the French Paris Fire Brigade are doing everything they can to bring the terrible Notre Dame fire under control. All means are being used except for water bombing aircrafts, which, if used, could lead to the collapse of the entire structure of the cathedral. And then later, when the president was speaking, he said that the building, I believe the word he used, was leveled.
You know, all I can say is we now have an idiot in chief. I'm sorry, but this man opens his mouth without any consideration for the reality or facts of a situation. And this isn't fake news, folks. We all saw it. you know, and we all saw what was going on in France. And they know how to fight fire. The professional firefighters there, just like ours do here. And he had no business weighing in on any of that, except to say, like Pete Buttigieg did, in French no less, how much of a tragedy this was and that the world stands with France.
You know, if you take a look at the positioning of the cathedral, and I remember when I saw it for the first time, we came up from the back and saw the buttresses and saw the way in which it was constructed. It is in a very crowded place.
Oops. Sorry.
It is in a I want the audience to know that for once that wasn't me.
that was me. Sorry.
So you take a look at that cathedral. It is surrounded by other buildings. Can you imagine if you water bombed it?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Precision is not what goes on when they're doing forest fires. I mean, right. They're just dropping tons of mass all right. At once on top. You know, I'm a little bit hesitant to just use this tragedy that the world has sort of embraced as a historic loss and now banding together for its restoration and all the things that it means to beat up Donald Trump. You know, it's like he takes care of that himself. I mean, he doesn't come across well on this, but, you know, let's not let that. I personally think we ought to just talk about the what happened in Paris and what it means and what it will mean going forward. And it is important to remember that one firefighter was seriously injured. Mm-hmm. That's terrible. But it was a remarkable response and focus on that. You know, there's enough other things Trump will say this week that we can beat him up on if you're interested.
And a miracle that a place that is one of the most trafficked portions of land in the world did not have a death.
It's a
miracle.
And
it gets 30,000 visitors a day.
And
their story in the Capital Region, and it was in today's Times Union and elsewhere in the media, was that a group from Clifton Park, mm-hmm. from Shenandoah Central Schools, was on a French exchange over there, and they had toured it just yesterday morning, hours before the fire. So they were among the last group to see it before this current tragedy, before it reopens. And I don't know, how long will it take to reopen? I worry that I won't get to see it in my lifetime.
Well, it's going to be years. Yeah. It's going to be a long time. I agree with your remarks, Mike, about, Trump may be ill-advised to say what he did off the top of his head. But, you know, this guy is just who he is, and people will know it when they see it.
All right.
I get Libby.
We'll be right back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And we have Alan Chartok, we have Mike Spain, JP Miller, and Libby Post. And we also have a very cool event going on tickets are available for today with Pete Seeger. Alan, tell us about it.
I will, Joe. Thank you. Pete is, of course, the guy we always referred to here as our Pete, because he was ours. He's a part of the radio station. A couple of months before he died, he called here at WAMC and said, I want to do something for the station. And he did. He did that now famous Peekskill concert, which we all went to. And he came out on the stage and everybody stood up. And I just get emotional thinking about it. Everybody stood up in the entire place and wouldn't sit down, just kept applauding for him. And the respect our audience had for our Pete was just so great. So when it came to his birthday, which is his actual birthday, which is on May 3rd, and there are many other celebrations of his life that will be going on, but on May 3rd, we were unique. We quickly grabbed the Linda, and we said, there are only 200 seats, $100 each. It'll all go for each seat. It will all go into the lockbox and help us. And it is my understanding that those phones are already ringing. 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262. And the great news is, a guy who can channel Pete better than anybody I know, I don't mean imitate him, but channel him, is the great Happy Traum. And Happy was the editor of Sing Out, took over from Pete knew him all of his life. Pete loved Happy, and every time they had a he had a chance to be with him, he was with him. Happy was a great singer and knows how to lead people in song, which is what this is going to be all about. Everybody singing together. You're not going to want to miss this one, folks. It's 1-800-323-9262. If I were you, I'd make that call right now or go to WAMC.org and do it that way. Thanks, Joe.
All right, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC.
And again, May 3rd.
May 3rd.
7 p.m. at the Linda.
All right. Let's go on to, well, you were making a point, Alan. You were agreeing with Libby on the Trump. And then I thought Mike was going to say something. But I
no, Mike did say something. To set it up, as everybody remembers, Libby was appropriately caustic about what
thank you so much.
Appropriately caustic about what Trump had done, saying we should drop, you know, we should get a water tanker to drop and right. would have washed away, you know, a couple of other blocks besides. Yeah. But he didn't think as usual, or he did think and didn't matter to him. You know, if I'm the president, I can say anything I want, and that'll happen. And Mike came back and said, you know, let's leave him alone. This is such a great tragedy, and we have such great respect for the French and for what they've done and for the cathedral. And you know, it was just a question of whether or not we should take the opportunity to hit on Trump for what he had done. I think the consensus of the group was probably not.
Okay. But let's not just...
Was that a good summation?
That was a great summation. And
so
the
story isn't about Trump. It's
no,
about
it's not. It's about
France.
This. It's about France. But as I said before we went on the air, you know, the conspiracy theories are already out there. You know, the folks in France...
And now you're going to spread them and promulgate them if you bring them up.
Yeah. No. Well, you know, the thing is that the folks in France, the fire marshals say this is an accident. Macron is saying this is an accident. And you've got these people online, the conspiracy theorists who are already starting. Notre Dame is on fire because the Jews want to get rid of Christianity. You know, I mean, Mike, I know that that's not what you think, but it's like it's out there already and blaming the Muslims
and
as well.
Now it's out to the WAMC audience.
Well, I think Mike makes a point. Well, I think Mike makes a point. The less said about that kind of nonsense, you know, we get letters here at WAMC which are really nutsy, as we used to say, nutsy cuckoo. And I just put them in my PIA file. I don't even respond to them because they're so crazy. You know, that's what we do. So to even make notice, Libby.
Sorry, I respectfully disagree, but that's okay.
Okay, you want to explain yourself?
Yeah, I think that people need to understand that even despite the facts, despite what the official accounts are, that there are still people out there who, like the president, like others in his cabinet, will disregard the facts in order to just ram down and create the conspiracies of who they think is responsible for this and just maintain anti-Semitism and Islamophobia.
But it should be pointed out that President Trump did not assert that this was
anything other
than an accident.
Right.
He just
got
some of the facts on the ground wrong and kind of knee-jerked about how to put it out.
This is true, but then there are other people who are saying...
Yeah, well, it's okay. So, and as a panel, we can discuss this. It's a germane issue as to whether or not the press or people should repeat a lie that only a few tiny people, crazy people, are gonna say. I'm sorry for using the word crazy. I do hear from people from time to time saying I'm not allowed to use that.
Clinically unstable
could be
a term.
Clinically unstable people. And then when we repeat it, a lot of people hear it, and we say, okay, well, this is the touchstone for what we're talking about. So therefore, I'm with Mike on this one. I think the less said about the mentally unstable people who write us letters and who say this kind of thing, the better.
All right. Let's move on to another topic. We'll talk about the Mueller report. It is expected to be released on Thursday, according to the Justice Department. The question is, how much will we see? The Thursday release, it is a redacted version of the special counsel Robert Mueller's report on President Trump, his associates, and Russia's interference in the 2016 election, setting the stage for further battles in Congress over the politically explosive inquiry. Carrie Kupick, a spokeswoman for the department, said Monday that officials intend to issue the report to Congress and the public on Thursday morning. The report, which runs nearly 400 pages without exhibits, has been the subject of heated debate since Attorney General William Barr notified lawmakers last month that Mueller had completed his 22-month investigation. The report's release to Congress and the public will come days after Barr told Congress he believes spying on the Trump campaign occurred during the 2016 election, a statement that Boyd Trump and his supporters, who have long said that the Russia investigation arose from false accusations and bad motives. In a four-page letter to Congress, Barr said in March that that Mueller did not find that the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it conspired or coordinated with Russia in its efforts to influence the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Barr's letter also said that the special counsel withheld judgment on whether Trump tried to obstruct justice during the investigation, but that was Barr's interpretation. What will we find out on Thursday?
Well, so I read this, and I think expectations are everything in politics, and Barr set expectations with his four-page letter that the Mueller report basically gives President Trump a clean bill of health. There's some, you know, questionable things, but it's basically a clean bill of health. And what I think is going to come out in the Mueller report is far from a clean bill of health. What I also expect is that a lot of Americans will actually want to read the document, and most Americans have not read redacted documents. And redacted documents, when you read them, are maddening, because just when you think that you're going to find out something interesting, there's a big black mark for three or four lines. So this is going to be huge news on Thursday, and going to dominate, I think, the narrative into next week.
You know, I think you make a great point, because Trump got the soundbite when Mueller released his four-page summary a few weeks ago. He got to say, totally exonerated of all, everything. I'm totally exonerated. It was a witch hunt, and it got nowhere. And that is the message. And now, even if there is evidence in the redacted version of the report that supports and raises questions about Trump's involvement in covering up and obstructing justice, which evidently there was, the way that Mueller portrayed it, if there is evidence that comes out, Trump's base will say that's just after the fact, belly aching by the Democrats. They want to keep this thing going. They want to beat a dead horse. Let's move on. And Trump really got to have the message out there. So unless there's a smoking howitzer, which I can't imagine there is, it's probably just going to become bric-brac and more back and forth, and it's not going to change many opinions.
Well, we do know, Mike, what the president keeps on saying about his total exoneration. We also know that when the four-page piece came out by the AG, it made it clear that the obstruction issue was still not resolved. And so people are going to be reading that. Look, 90% of the Republicans in this country have not moved off the dime. They are still fiercely adherent to the President of the United States. That hasn't changed. And I doubt very much, no matter what happens, it's going to change. I'll tell you what's going to happen. CNN is going to take his previous remarks about total exoneration. They're going to play them again and again and again. Then they're going to show you what the report actually says. And I don't think it's going to change one mind on either side.
Right. Maybe there'll be some sway of people who are generally undecided about it all, and there might be something that might play into that. But Fox, I was going to say, CNN is not where the supporters of President Trump will be watching the report on the Thursday. They'll be watching on Fox News, and it won't be portrayed that way on Fox News.
No, that's right. And that is where this country is at right at this moment.
Well, I don't think it'll change minds, but I think that there, in a 400-page prosecutorial document, there are going to be revelations and things that haven't been reported in the press, I think. And not that it's going to change minds, but it's going to be a historical moment to see, one, how this investigation was carried out, what the president's reaction was to it. And there are certainly going to be evidence of connections with Russia that was investigated that the people that are for Trump will say no big deal, and the people that are against Trump will say, look, this guy is owned by the Russians. It says it right here in the report.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your thoughts. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We will be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday morning. It is the 16th of April, and we want to mention an event that is happening in May, May 3rd to be exact, which is Pete Seeger's birthday.
It is our Pete. I love the man, and I got to tell you, and we all love him here, I got to tell you, he did so much for this radio station. He was such a part of it. And on my credenza, there is a log that he cut that said to Alan and all the gang at WAMC, to everybody at WAMC, keep the flame alive. So he really understood, and he's part of it. And on May 3rd, we're going to be there at the WAMC Performing Arts Center at 7 o'clock at night. 1-800-323-9262. Again, 1-800-323-9262. Now, there are only 200 seats, and so here's what. Don't be calling me up later and calling me names. Don't be calling me up, because what's going to happen is, you know, you're going to tell me that you've given, you know, a lot of money to WAMC, and I'm going to feel badly for you. But there's nothing I'm going to be able to do. A seat is a seat. You know what I mean? Okay.
1-800-323-9262.
Happy Traum.
Yes?
Happy Traum will be channeling Pete. I didn't say imitating him. I said channeling him. Bob says, rebuilding Notre Dame. Oh, am I reading the letters now?
Yes, Joe? Sir.
Rebuilding Notre Dame, says Bob. It's impressive how quickly some French billionaires came forward to pledge hundreds of millions of euros for the Notre Dame rebuilding project. Wouldn't it be nice if an influential American billionaire, say in a high political position, made such a pledge and urges fellow Americans to do what they can? Any bets on whether that will happen?
Warren Buffett might step forward. I don't know.
Right.
Bill Gates.
John says, Notre Dame. Good morning, panel. Speaking on to Libby's point, I say that I frequent a lot of alternative social media, and while she's correct that there may have been some conspiracy theories, what I see more of is people saying that the fire is emblematic of the decline of Western civilization. Take that however you like. Leslie says, Fox News is repeating conspiracy theories. It's just not people with tinfoil hats repeating conspiracy theories. Fox commentators are doing it as well. Glenn Beck came right out and blamed Islamists. Unbelievable. This guy is unbelievable. Out of control. And Daryl says, yes, we should not give more energy to the conspiracy stuff. Repeating idiocy just spreads it. Well put. And we heard from Susan, who said, Mueller and Barr. I've been wondering what right Barr had to withhold the report and issue his paltry summation instead. Don't we citizens and the Congress have a legal right to see it? Could one of you comment on this? Thanks. Could one of you comment? Because I always have a comment to me. I think that the first thing you got to know is that there are laws, and there are positions that you can't just out grand jury testimony without having a very good reason for doing it.
Right. I mean, there were four reasons that they can redact, you know, and one is secret grand jury information, which is, which is protected by law. And then there's he can leave out references to people who were not indicted and not accused of any crimes because it might be embarrassing to them. And
that's the weakest of all. That's a so-called innocent third party.
Right. And if there was executive privilege violated, he could advise the White House that this might be problematic and preempt by taking that out. And that's what people worry about, that maybe the it might not indict the son of President Trump, Don Jr., or his daughter or son-in-law, but it might have information that would be pejorative about them, and he might cleanse it of that information, and that, you know, might be playing politics.
Do you believe for a single second, or the rest of the panel, do any of you believe for a single second that the White House doesn't know what's in that report? I mean, it's been denied. I'm sure they kept it cleansed. But, we have Barr, who clearly is now representing the president as the president's lawyer, or as Mike might say, lapdog. And what you have there is you know, lots of ways. Remember when they caught Nunez in the bushes up at the White House,
bringing the document to the president.
Right. I can't believe that this president doesn't know it. What's interesting is that we're hearing from a lot of news sources that they're worried at the White House.
Well, it's interesting you mention Nunez. You know, as the lead Republican on the House Intelligence Committee, he has signed on to the effort to have it turned over to the Intelligence Committee, which could review it in private and has the security clearance to do so. So both the Democrats and the Republicans who run the House Intelligence Committee do agree on that. Now, that's good. I mean, I'd like to see a House panel look at it and weigh in.
You mean
whether,
in total?
In total. See, yeah. the unredacted. You know, JP, you're so right. When you see a redacted document, I'm sure the front page of the Washington Post and the New York Times will be one of the pages where there's like a couple of articles and, you know, like
bunch
the
of
and.
Yeah,
and,
I think that one, they should just have a whole front page that's just totally blacked out.
Right. I think they will.
Mueller report.
I'll bet there will be. Yeah.
It'll be a great visual.
And it may be one page of that. And the rest is stuff, but still, it makes the point.
Yeah. I'm surprised it hasn't been totally leaked yet. I really am surprised. And, you know, somebody might have it, and they're going to wait for Thursday and then publish the whole thing.
Well, what I hope is at least you can get—I imagine that there is a Mueller summary in the beginning of it, and hopefully at least that will be unredacted and the major— you know, points and table of contents and all that stuff, at least we can get some sense of what's in there, if not the whole 400 pages.
When it comes to the actual, you know, how everybody will respond, and ultimately it comes down to how the president will respond, but to Alan's point earlier, it's not going to change any narrative. He's not going to certainly say anything that he hasn't been saying. There's nothing that's going to come out that is going to change the opinion that people have. Their
opinion. The 90%.
Well, even of us, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
even of anybody on the left. Still, it's not going to change their opinion either, right?
Right.
I agree. If there's anything at all redacted, people who believe. that Trump committed obstruction of justice will say, obviously, that redacted page has the proof in it, you know, or something.
Well, I also think that as we get this out, there are going to be a couple of redactions, page 32 and 79, that it is going to be thought of and understood that these are key redactions that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats are going to battle to try and have those revealed.
I remember page 32 in the Blackboard Journal.
That's true, though. It'll probably take on a meaning. Page 79 and page 41. You know, it'll be that kind of thing. Yeah.
And then the battle will come on to get the full report, and then so people could read it.
And some will make a point that here we are looking for something to incriminate the president so we can kick him out. And then we'll say, what are those 20 or so Democrats who are running for president saying about what they're going to do to make this country better and improve things for people? You know, that will be the story that doesn't get on the air a lot.
You know, you are so right. And I keep thinking about all of this through the minds of the historians who are going to be presenting books on this administration for the next 40, 50 years. It's going to keep on coming. Each of these terrible fallacies that are being mouthed by the President of the United States, each of them becomes a part of the total narrative of the administration. This is not going to be a good period in the United States history, except the possibility exists that he'll have his way and we will become a totalitarian and fascist state.
And then those books will be burned.
And then they'll never get written.
All right. Let us take a break. Anybody have anything else? We're good on that? Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We will talk about other stuff. We have many more topics. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will be back after this short break.
Phones are ringing. 1-800-323-9262. Pete Seeger, Happy Traum, May the 3rd at 7 p.m.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Libby Post, and you, panel@WAMC.org, where we get letters like this.
Yes, we do, Joe. From Sean in Stone, Arabia, it says, why don't the Dems just subpoena or ask Mueller to testify? Are they not allowed to, or are they afraid to get answers directly from the horse's mouth? I think they will. I don't have any doubt that they will sooner or later. What do you think, guys? Do you think that Mueller will be subpoenaed to come or asked to testify? I'm sure he will.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, will he, though? Mm-hmm. I mean, unless he's compelled by a subpoena, and would he honor a subpoena? I mean, it's interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a law and order kind of guy. He's going to, if he's subpoenaed, I think he'll show up.
Jay says, will we ever learn? Hello, panel. What I would like to know is, was it illegal for the Trump camp not to advise the authorities that they had been approached by the Russians? If this isn't illegal, it should be. Also, wondering if the other camps would have don't the same. I'm reading you exactly what it says. Also wondering if the other camps would have don't the same. Thanks, Jay.
You know, I learned a term from our own Malcolm Nance, who sometimes is a roundtable panelist, and that is unwitting asset. It's when a foreign power uses you and manipulates you and you don't even know it.
One of the great lines in here, gang, is if this isn't illegal, it should be. Well, how many times since Trump has been the president have you seen him do something which is a breaking of a norm? You know, like taxes or other things, but not illegal. So I love the sentence here. If it isn't illegal, it should be. Well, yes, but that's across the board. Don't you see? You do see. Okay. And then Peter says, Mueller report. Mueller wanted to find the truth and didn't want his investigation to be political. But if he reached a conclusion that either cleared Trump or condemned his behavior, either would have been seen as political, because in the current climate, there seems to be no such thing as truth or objectivity. I think that's why he left the conclusions to Congress, which is a political body. Well, politics, as I've said ad nauseum, is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources. Mm-hmm. And anything this guy says or does is going to be political, and that scarce resources will be determined as a result. And Tracy says, abbreviations, acronyms, etc. The WMC panel asks correspondents to follow guidelines such as short, no links, spell correctly, and so forth. Recently, panel discussions have referred to AOC, Mayor Pete, owning no TV, or subscribing to New York NYT, or WP, or using Google every minute. I may be a bit of a Luddite, but it helps to hear full names that I may research the news. I did hear Buttigieg's name today from a consistent listener, L-U-A-A, love you all anyway, an aspiring Pinkos, capital P-I-N-K-O-S, member. And thank you. And that's Tracy and Kobelskill.
Good point.
Good letter. And Rosalind says, Libby and free speech. Good morning, panel. I was disappointed at the way Libby's attempt to bring up a measured point of view regarding Notre Dame and conspiracy theorists was squelched before she had a chance to fully express it. Libby, you want to say anything else about that? Because then I would check in on that letter.
Thank you for everyone who wrote in support of my freedom of speech.
Well, that's right. And that's why we have what's called a panel. Mm-hmm. We sit here and we either agree with each other or we disagree with each other.
Or we tell each other to shut up. You know,
What makes it interesting. But in your case, no one told you to shut up. That's for sure. And anybody who knew you, Libby, as I do, would know nobody ever tells Libby to shut up. We don't do that here.
Well,
otherwise, if only. We wouldn't be able to walk afterwards.
Oh, are you inferring that I would kick you in the shins if you told me to shut up?
Well, in the shins or some other place.
Uh-huh.
Maybe a little
Okay.
Higher.
I'm not a violent person.
No.
I use the power of the pen.
All right. Let's go to... with that... With that, let's get into more trouble. So, in attacking Ilhan Omar, Trump revives his familiar refrain against Muslims. This from the New York Times by Maggie Haberman. President Trump has often seen the political benefits of stigmatizing Muslims during the 2016 campaign. He would not rule out creating a registry of Muslims in the United States. He claimed to have seen thousands of Muslims cheering on rooftops in New Jersey after the September 11th attacks, a statement that was widely debunked. And after the deadly attacks in Paris and California, Mr. Trump called for a moratorium on Muslims traveling to the United States. "I think Islam hates us," Mr. Trump told Anderson Cooper, the CNN host. Now, with 19 months until the 2020 election, Mr. Trump is seeking to rally his base by sounding that theme again. And this time, he has a very specific target, Representative Ilhan Omar, Democrat of Minnesota and one of the first Muslim women elected to Congress. In Ms. Omar, a Somali refugee whose family received asylum in the United States when she was a teenager, Mr. Trump has found a perfect foil, a progressive whose embrace of the boycott Israel movement and attacks on supporters of the Jewish state have already made her a divisive figure within her own party. As the first woman to wear a hijab on the House floor, she pushed for a rules change to allow it. She is also a powerful, invisible symbol for Muslims and refugees.
Okay. Alan's looking at me. So,
well, you know.
I know. Look, I might not agree with some of her politics, but that's no reason, as I said before, I speak with the power of the pen. It's no reason to incite violence against somebody. But this is
terrible.
That's all Trump knows how to do is to be a bully and to get other people to do his bidding for him.
And which the
is
death exactly, threats are coming in.
Right, and the death threats are coming in, which are totally unacceptable. This is just who he is as a person. He is a horrible human being.
Take them out of here and beat them up.
Yeah, right. He has said it constantly. You know, he's told the police, use excessive force. He's now saying to his folks, go and threaten this woman. This woman expressed her opinion. That's okay. We can agree to disagree, but it doesn't have to turn violent. But he foments violence, and that's not what we need in a commander-in-chief.
Well, it's a very effective way to get the votes that you need, and that is putting fear and blame into the issue, whatever it is. In this particular case, we're making people afraid again. We're showing a video that, frankly, for me, causes post-traumatic stress when you see the video of the Twin Towers burning. And to evoke that horrifying image and connect it to this woman's comments that essentially, you know, maybe they weren't articulate enough for him, but they essentially said, not all Muslims are to blame for 9/11. And Lord, that's true. Not all Muslims are to blame for 9/11. There were 19 people to blame for 9/11 and maybe some other supporters. But without getting into that argument, he did the same for the immigrants coming across the border. He's making us afraid of them. He's calling them rapists and murderers and bad hombres. And he's scaring us. And then he's using fear, and he's blaming problems on them and blaming problems on Muslims. And that is a very sad way to build support.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think Omar could have shmudov, as I always say, said some terrible people did this, because it was a terrible.
She should have said it differently, but she said some people did something. And that's the quote that the New York Post, which is now facing some boycotts, pulled out when they showed the image of the Twin Towers. Some people did something, but it wasn't everybody. You know, but making it that way seems insulting to people who suffered so much loss because of the bombing of the World Trade Center and the other tragedies of that day on September 11th.
Well, Mueller wrote a letter and said, "Good morning, Alan. I disagree with you and Mike and agree with Libby. You have spent 2 years talking about Trump and his lies and expressing his lack of knowledge. Now you are against her. Against her because she said Trump is a fool for supporting France. Firefighters should have dropped firebombs." No, on the contrary, Mueller. I never said anything like that. I'd like well, I'd like you to know that I never said anything like that. I think it was a foolish thing that Trump did. I said so on this radio station right now. So what are you talking about?
No, I think the listener probably misheard what was going on. I did express my opinion that we shouldn't repeat unfounded conspiracy theories. It only perpetuates them. And that is, I believe, what you and I disagreed about.
That's
it, wasn't
right.
It, Lib?
Yeah. Yes, it was.
No,
but
we both agree the president right. Made stupid comments.
Yes, but I still love you, Mike, so it's fine.
We heard from somebody we heard from somebody who said, so the fundraising has already begun. What we're going to hear for the next 2 weeks is this Pete thing. Exhausting and annoying.
And well, it looks like the tickets will be sold out and you won't hear much about it.
And, of course, there is no signature. By the way, they're going like hotcakes. But there's no signature, which signifies something to me. How many ways is there to spell coward?
Are the phones ringing?
Oh, yeah. Phones ringing like crazy.
All right. Let's go to Bernie Sanders' tax releases. Let's talk about that. He has released his tax returns and, guess what, guys? He's part of the 1%. Okay. I think we knew that, but here we go. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, a leading candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination, disclosed 10 years of tax returns on Monday, providing a more detailed look at his finances than what he offered when he ran for the White House in 2016. The returns show that Mr. Sanders' earnings shot up after his first presidential bid when he built up a vast national following. He and his wife, Jane, reported income that topped $1 million in 2016 and 2017, lifted by proceeds from his books. The couple had an adjusted gross income of $561,293 in 2018, according to their most recent tax return. Mr. Sanders had about $393,000 in book income last year, and he and his wife reported giving nearly $19,000 to charity. Their federal taxes came to $145,840 for an effective federal tax rate of 26%. Mr. Sanders' higher income in recent years has created some political awkwardness for the senator, who in his 2016 presidential campaign frequently rallied against millionaires and billionaires and their influence over the political process.
You know, people are funny about money. People are really funny about money. There was a poll, a Siena poll, I think, today. I didn't read it very carefully, but I saw the headline, and I think it said people didn't like the idea that Andrew Cuomo was going to make $200,000 for being the governor of New York. Well, it's a huge job. Come on now, folks. And
the governor will point out that there's superintendents of school in Long Island mm-hmm. and around the state that make 300 or more thousand.
What struck me, Joe, about what you said about Bernie is that he made over $1 million and gave $19,000 to charity. So that's less than 2% of his income to charity. I think that's pretty light.
Me too.
I hadn't heard that before, but you know, Bernie, I think his big benefit and strong suit in being an effective politician is his authenticity. This guy is an authentic guy. And I think some of these news stories where you see that he has not one home, not two homes, but he has three homes. When he was going out to campaign for Hillary Clinton last time, he demanded flying in a private jet, which, as we all know, is the worst form of pollution is on private jet with two or three people flying on that plane. So his authenticity, if someone can challenge him and point out these things, I think it would be an effective attack against him. I think we would all sign up for a socialism where we can all own three homes and make $1 million a year on book deals and fly around in private planes. I'd sign up right now. But he is opening himself up to criticism with his behavior.
But don't you think, JP, that by getting it out now, it will get it out of the way? It will be a long, far away, forgotten thing by the time. I mean, if he ends up getting the nomination and he runs against President Trump, will his tax returns hurt him when the president either hasn't had his released or maybe they will have been made public by then? I just don't think he's vulnerable on that regard.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know that he's that good under pressure. Of course, what we're all thinking about here is up on that stage as Hillary was with him, and now it's him versus Trump in a debate. He was on Fox, I think, last night.
Yes.
And there are those people who wrote that it was pathetic, and there are those people who wrote, he really showed him. You know, this is just sort of in the mind of the beholder, that's for sure.
When I was making those comments about his success politically, I was referencing the context in which he's going to be in the Democratic primary. I think that his opponents, if it looks like he's going to win, are going to bring this up and say this guy is not the real article. You know, Ocasio-Cortez talks about how she lives, you know, in her neighborhood, and she, you know, goes to the bodega, and she, you know, really lives the life of someone who is not part of the 1%, and meanwhile he now is, because of his position as a U.S. senator.
I think it's hard for any of them not to become part of the 1%. I think it's just part of what happens when you're an elected official on that level. Money comes in, you write a book, you do this, you do that. AOC will end up being part of the 1% if she stays in Congress eventually as well. They all do.
And she'll get criticized every time she eats a meal at a fine restaurant.
Right. I mean, it's just part of the deal.
So all these, you know,
and healthcare for free.
Trump's benefiting from being president of the United States financially. That's okay.
Well, you know, you never know, because the fact of the matter is that he could be bankrupt for all we know, and he might need the job.
I think a guy like Pete Buttigieg, who it seems to me comes from
Modest means
would be able to use this as a wedge issue against
Absolutely.
Bernie.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would say it's going to impact.
Do you really
primary.
Think he will? I mean, you know, if there's one thing Buttigieg has going for him, I think, is that people see him as a reasonable and
right.
nice guy.
I don't
guy.
Think he'll use I don't it.
He's
see
not
him.
Hitting low.
Yeah.
Right. Someone else will use it, but it will help.
Yeah. Or
it
may
right.
be one yeah. of his people yeah. who uses
you know,
it,
who
but it
else,
won't be him.
You know, I mean, Kamala Harris is part of the 1%. Almost all of them are in some respect. So,
well, Peter Sagal on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me over the weekend, he noted that during the 2016 campaign, Bernie Sanders would frequently bemoan the influence of millionaires and billionaires. He says he'll now just have to change it to billionaires and trillionaires.
Right.
Yeah.
Just change it up a little bit. That's all you have to do. All right. Let's go on to, let's see, what else we want to talk about today. I do want to spend a moment, because we're waiting for, obviously, this week we'll find out about the Mueller report, so that'll be the big deal. The other thing is that I wanted to talk about in regards to Bernie Sanders is about the overall money in the Democratic race. Democratic presidential candidates on Monday provided the first broad look at campaign finances. The New York Times did take a look at the money race, and while we're speaking about Bernie Sanders, $18.2 million raised so far. Second?
Kamala Harris?
That's right. $12 million. $12 million.
I think Kirsten Gillibrand is on that list, and she's in the seven figures, right?
That
she raised three.
$3 million.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds paltry, doesn't
Pete,
it?
$3 million.
I think Pete raised $1 million
Mayor
after
Pete,
his announcement.
Yes, Mayor Pete is a $7.1 million. Amy Klobuchar, $5 million. Jay Inslee, $2 million. Julian Castro, $1.3 million. Tulsi Gabbard, $1.9 million. John Hickenlooper, $2 million. So the real biggies as far as money go: Bernie Sanders at 18.2, Kamala Harris at $12 million, Beto O'Rourke at $9.4 million, and then Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, and Cory Booker, in that order.
Isn't it interesting how the American people, despite where we are on the political spectrum, have a thing with money? I mean, people either respect it or not. A lot of people think Mike Bloomberg is great because he made all of that money. Warren Buffett is a great guy because he made all of that money. So don't assume just because people are rich that they are unpopular in this culture. It doesn't work that way.
Well, look at Trump. I mean,
he lost the election.
Yes, he did, but he won the presidency. But there's a substantial number of his base who, you know, think he does that. The amount of money that he says he has is part of the allure.
Absolutely right, Libby. Well, unless somebody misinterpret anything I've said. You're absolutely right, Libby.
Thank
it now
you,
costs $1 million to get a membership in Mar-a-Lago, right? Isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Joe, after hearing what you said about who raised the money, I think it really solidifies. Money is hugely important in politics. This is how you hire staff, how you air TV ads, and if you don't have money, you're not a candidate. I think this now solidifies Bernie as the prohibitive front runner, and I think it also solidifies Kamala Harris as not just one of a number of candidates, but she is a strong number two right now in running for the nomination. That's a huge money figure that she raised, and she should now, in my opinion, not be talked of as one of a group of people, but it now seems like a Bernie, Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg race.
Now, and we don't even have Biden in here.
Right, that's the thing. Wait until Biden gets in.
And, oh, that's right, Joe Biden. Isn't he thinking about it?
Well, he's still leading in all the polls, that's even though he's not in.
And the thing is this, is that, you know, yes, Bernie has raised all this money, but he's been raising money for a lot longer than Mayor Pete has. So if you look at the amount of money that Pete has raised in a very short amount of time versus how much money Bernie has raised over months, Buttigieg might be in the lead based on the amount of time it's taken him to raise money.
That's an excellent point, and I had not thought of that.
Well, I think.
Because Bernie's been building this list over decades, and Buttigieg has been building this list over a couple weeks.
Right. As a very good letter writer wrote yesterday, has Bernie reached the max? In order to win, he's going to have to get a lot of independents and some Republicans and others. We know that he's a great favorite of the American people, and they are not deserting him, especially in the Democratic, sphere. They're going to stay with him. They're going to give him the money. Is it enough?
Who knows? We have to wait to see.
That's what everybody always says. We have to wait and see.
Yeah, you have to wait and see.
Or will you follow this for us, Libby?
Sure.
Stay on it.
No problem, babe.
Report back next week.
Okay.
All right. My thanks to everybody. We are out of time. Panel at WAMC.org. And last push on the Pete Seeger.
Okay.
Well, not
now
last
remember,
push, but a push.
Remember, a big push. Remember that we're filling the lockbox. We have some seats left. Phones are ringing. You go online at WMC.org. You dial 1-800-323-9262. A wonderful concert with one of the true great people in American folk music, Happy Traum. He'll be there. He'll be singing, leading us all in song in honor of Pete. I can't wait for that performance. May 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Linda. Dial it now or you will not get in. 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262.
All right, we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. We'll be back right after the short break.